You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, mahoganysilvering.net. Tennessee's Whiskey, the number one bestseller by L. Loren. Single father Weston Daniels has built a nice life for himself and his five-year-old son. After escaping the nefarious family business, all he wants is the peace and quiet of the South and the occasional no-strings-attached roll in the hay. But destiny steps in when he meets an ebony beauty who bombards his bar. Grad student Patricia Woods is on the brink of homelessness and needs some quick cash to pay her overdue rent. A redneck bar named Whiskey's would do just the trick with its notorious bikers and flowing tips. However, when Weston's past catches up with him, he is faced with choosing between her life and the happiness he desires. Tennessee's Whiskey by best-selling author L. Loren. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today.
Passion Pride, Alejandro. An interracial romance author, Mahogany Silvering. Alejandro, the son of a jaguar king, who doesn't want to be king. When he has a premonition of a human woman's fight with drug coyotes, he rushes to save her. He takes her on the run to keep her safe from the cartel, who mistakenly believes that she has stolen from him. Alejandro and Regina fall in love. However, when his father is killed by cartel enforcers, Alejandro is forced to become king. But Regina feels unworthy to be his queen. Can this reluctant jaguar king lead his people, protect his homeland, and make Regina, a human, his queen? Passion's Pride, Alejandro, by romance author Mahogany Silvering. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today.
You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, mahoganysilvering.net. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining the Mahogany Says Show. I'm your host, Mahogany Silvering, and we've got a great show for you. Tonight we have a double feature with author Tatrice Harrison and Stella Eromanister Ajanku. I may have said it totally wrong. I hope she forgives me. But our first guest tonight is Tatrice Harrison. So say hello, Tatrice.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Yes, we're doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Glad to be able to speak to you today on a Thursday. I had to think about it. I was about to say Friday, but I was like, nope, not yet.
Right, it's the almost Friday.
Yes,
they call it Friday.
It is almost Friday.
Yeah, it's a Friday Eve. That's what we call it.
Oh, okay. I'll go with that.
Well, welcome. I'm glad you joined us tonight. So, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you were inspired to write.
So, I'm Tatrice Harrison. I'm from New Orleans, born and raised in New Orleans.
All right.
By day, yes. Yes, attorney by day and author by night, somewhat of a poet. Been practicing law. I always forget. I think I've been practicing law 12 years or something like that. And started writing about 2 years ago. And my first book was just released on June 19th of this year.
Oh, perfect day, Juneteenth.
Yes, Juneteenth, exactly. Especially since the book talks about racism, talks about sexism, and talks about colorism. So it's an ideal book on the ideal day.
Yes, and it came out on a perfect day. And I'm also from New Orleans, that's why I'm like, yes.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that. I didn't realize you was from New Orleans. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. I sure am. My sister was, one sister was in Harvey, but she's moved here now, and I'm near Atlanta right now. So we're all spread out after Katrina, so my sister retired here, so
Georgia's cool. So you a Who Dat fan then, huh?
Yes, still am.
Okay, so you're not an Atlanta fan.
No, sorry, okay, sorry, good. Dirty Birds. That's that. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
It's like, I got to see the Saints. My boys, the Saints and my Cowboys, I will say that, because we went back and forth to San Antonio, so those two, that's my team.
Okay.
But anyway, so what made you decide to entitle your book Bitch Hunt?
Well, it's a couple of reasons why. The book deals with five black female attorneys. I'm in one of the chapters. I'm chapter one. And the story talks about how each one of the women deal with people attacking them for various reasons, for who they are, who people perceive them to be, and basically takes you through how they navigate through that situation. And so when I was coming up with titles at first, because a lot of the – pretty much everybody that's in the book is an attorney, but some of them are judges, or some of them used to be judges. Because it kind of dealt with a little bit of politics, I kind of first came up with a name about women in politics, but I was like, you know what, that's not going to work. And so when I thought about Witch Hunt, I thought that Witch Hunt would be perfect, but by taking the W off, because I was talking about black females, and putting a B in front of it and calling it Bitch Hunt. So that's really how the name came about.
Okay. So what was the toughest thing about writing it?
Trying to stay focused, trying to tell myself that I can do this, not listening to that little voice in my head telling me that, you know, that I shouldn't do this, that this wasn't a good idea. I should stop, you know, that little negative voice sometimes that comes in our head telling us things that, oh, you shouldn't do this, nobody's gonna like this. So just being able to quiet that voice and hearing, you know, the real voice. The voice of confidence and letting me know that, yes, I can do this. I should do this. You are going to do this. And that, you know, I could push through this. So I would say people say call it writing. What do they call it when you, what is it, writer's block? I actually call it writer's pause. I call it pause. So it's, to me, you're taking a pause instead of a block.
That's a good explanation for it. Because we do pause and we're still...
Yeah,
or, you know, like, okay, yeah, it's just a little break because you'll get it and you will continue to write. It's just sometimes it's like a wall. It feels like that wall. But we have to climb over the wall or punch through the wall or whatever we got to do to get back on track.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the women who are also stories that are in the book. Or can you share one without giving away too much?
Sure. How about I share mine?
Yes, okay.
I'll share
mine. Perfect.
So my story is, as I said, I'm an attorney. So I'm coming, I kind of start you off in the middle of when the incident happens with me, where I'm confronted by a stranger in a parking lot who sneaks up on me. And then I take you through this exchange of what happens between the stranger and myself. How the stranger basically won't go away, although I'm telling the stranger, no, leave me alone. So that exchange happens for an amount of time. And then what happens is I finally leave that situation. And then about 2 weeks later, I get a knock on my front door, and there's five police officers there to arrest me.
Wow.
And I'm getting arrested because this stranger has called the police after I've left the area and told them this fantastic story that I pointed a firearm at him. And so now I'm being called into jail, and I take you through that whole thing of what happens with me getting, you know, falsely arrested, the whole situation with the trial, and the whole ordeal that I go through.
Wow.
Yes.
But and you made it through that. So this is, you know, you were already an
attorney,
and
you got to read the book for that.
Yes. So we definitely have to read the book. I know, and it's been a crazy week for me. Otherwise, I probably would have already had it read completely. But, you know, just the fact that to hear stories that are still, things that are still happening, and it's not just black men, it's black women. And it's all around.
Well, but that's the thing. You're going to hear more about the black men, we as black women do not get that same highlight,
don't get the same,
that same conversation.
Nope.
No, we don't. We have to be our own cheerleaders for our own stories, because our stories don't get told. And if they do, they're put at the, you know, the last page on the last paragraph. It's not going to be the big news, you know, unless we have done something very egregious, then it'll be front page.
Exactly.
But something being, right, something being done to us, that story does not get told unless we try to tell that story.
That is true. And I'm glad that they, you know, I have seen stories of Breonna Taylor, and people have pushed that to the forefront, especially because of George Floyd. But there have been many women long before that whose story just is not told at all, unless their family members or friends bring it to the forefront and actually are active about, you know, remembering her name and putting her out there.
Exactly.
Because it's easy for us to get stuck in the system and swept under. And I've had my own brush, but I was not treated as badly, and it was over a civil case, but I was still expedited from one state to another. And it was, you know, not even a custody battle. It was a divorce that hadn't even taken place yet. And apparently in New Mexico, it is illegal to take your child out of the state without the spouse's permission, written permission. So they can call. Oh, yeah. And to the point where Texas was like, the child's with his mother, no big deal. So they had to go federal. So FBI came, picked me up, because the local law enforcement wouldn't do it. So, yeah.
Right.
But he had them in holding, until New Mexico get it on the books, because otherwise I would have had a federal warrant that I was being booked under.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a story right there. That's a story right there. That to me, I'm now calling all of these attacks on black women a bitch hunt.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they are. That's exactly what it is. You're being attacked wrongfully, because basically this person is threatened by you or whatever that reason is, and that's what they're doing. You know, and it's just ridiculous that we're being put in these positions where we have to fight for things that we shouldn't have to fight for and should not be put in those positions. But we do, but we are, and we do.
Exactly. And there's several women, and especially in states where there's not a whole lot of us, it was completely, totally different. And in Mexico, there's not a lot of us there. So it's not even set up for really, you know, you're just kind of forgotten in there. If I hadn't spoken to another person, I never would have gotten my day in court. Because they told them, don't talk to anyone, don't tell anybody why you're in here. Had I not, you know, had I followed their advice, I would still be sitting in there.
Oh, wow.
But it was another inmate that said, hey. I'm writing that one. Because that's going to be definitely a nonfiction. I write fiction, but that's definitely nonfiction. So.
That might be a bitch hunt too. That's what that sounds like. That sounds like a bitch hunt too.
Yeah, it's incredible how God took me out of that situation. But yeah, for the other women aren't so fortunate, and they get stuck there, and no one tells them anything, and they're sitting there not understanding that they have representation, or that they can, you know, they can take a part in how they are treated as far as getting a lawyer that understands what they're going through or actually can present their case. Because I know the prosecutor's office is overwhelmed, and then, I'm sorry, not the prosecutor, the defense, right?
You mean the public defender,
Public defender. Yes, they're always, it seems like they always have too many cases, and they're always running behind or not really sure. And they're like, okay, which one are you, when they sit down and talk to you? And if you don't have the money, that's what you're stuck with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty bad. That is definitely pretty bad. But that's another example of what these stories are about. And these are stories about professional women, you know, that are put into situations. I mean, I'm a professional. I mean, I'm in the legal field. And I mean, I'm getting arrested. And I'm in a position where now I'm the defendant. and I'm going into court and I'm seeing my name on the docket, the court docket, which gives you the list of all the cases for the day, and I'm in the position where I'm fighting for my life and my livelihood of 10, you know, facing 10 years in jail. So,
wow.
You know, this was not a, yeah, this was not a, this was not, you know, just some little whatever. But again, once, if you read the story, you know, get the book, you'll see, because I don't want to tell you too much of it, but
we don't want to spoil it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But no, but I'm just saying, like, the gravity and the seriousness of this. And then you had another chapter three, Gay Pope Payton, another person who was a judge who basically was also put in a position where she was fighting for her, you know, her name and reputation, and also having to go to court and having to go all the way to the Supreme Court in Mississippi. So these are not, these are not just, these are serious, serious situations because of jealousy or because of whatever it is that these, these women were put in these, you know, ridiculous situations and then, you know, had to navigate through these situations, however they did do that.
Right. And especially professional women. Yes.
Well, and then
you would think you would have some courtesy afforded to you because of your
feet. Exactly, but no. No,
because there is
no
courtesy
extended.
Because at
the end of the day, we're still just a black. Right,
black,
we're still just a black female.
You're still just a black
That's
woman.
That's right.
Yes.
Right, you're still just a black female, and you're insignificant, and this is how we're going to do you. Even when I go to court, still today, I told you I've been practicing since 2006, or whatever that is. So I've been practicing since October 13th of 2006. So even still today, when I go to some of these little parishes, and you know, because you're from here, I still get, are you an attorney? Even though I show them my bar card with my face on it, and I still get, are you an attorney? You know, and then they look at the card, and then they look at me. I still get that. Because
really?
I can't be the attorney. I got to be the defendant. I must be the social worker. I got to be anybody but the lawyer.
That's unbelievable.
I can have on a badge that's given to us by the Bar Association, and it could say attorney, and I guarantee you I'll still get asked by every white person that go into court, are you an attorney? I guarantee you I'll still get asked.
Wow. And see, I
have
never
no
been
to...
idea.
Yeah, people have no idea what professional women have to deal with, you know, not just in my profession, probably in any profession, because I'm sure medical doctors probably have the same conversation. I'm sure accountants
even law
have
enforcement.
Same conversation. Yeah, I'm sure.
Even law enforcement.
So the common denominator is black females. The conversation is the same. It's just a different profession, but it's the same conversation. Yes, I'm so-and-so. Yes, I am this. Yes, I am that. I don't know if you remember, it was a while back, somebody was having a problem on the airplane, and they said, is there a doctor? And the black female raised their hand, and they said, oh, no, we're not looking for techs or whatever. We're looking for a doctor. And she said, I am a doctor. And they asked her to prove it. But I bet you if a white man had raised his hand, they never would
have
asked
him
for his credentials.
Nope. Sure would.
She had to prove she was a doctor. Now, she did that because, of course, she wanted to help the person that was on the plane. But you're wasting time because you're questioning whether I'm a doctor. I don't think too many people would raise their hand and say
nobody
they're a doctor.
Nobody else is raising their hand. Exactly. Right. And if you were a tech, you wouldn't raise your hand as a doctor. Because immediately, if you were, or even a nurse, you would say, okay, I'm a nurse.
Right.
If there are no doctors, I can assist. But no, to
trust
even be questioned.
If they ask for doctors, I'm not raising my hand. Nobody
should
be raising their hand to say they're a doctor. I just don't think they're going to do that. But
because if they don't know what they're doing, they're not going to raise their hand anyway.
Right.
Not my field.
But again, she's a black female, so she can be a doctor.
She can't be
a doctor. You the blood, you the person that takes the blood, whatever they call that. You the blood person.
Right.
You can't be the doctor person. Yeah, the lab tech. I don't know. That's not my area. But so you the lab tech. You the other person. You anybody but the doctor. So it happened. Crazy because the people are looking at your race and can't believe that you could possibly be whoever it is that you say that you are. You know, it's like we gotta carry the sad part is black men and black women, but especially black women, we got to carry mm-hmm. our credentials around with us like a driver's license.
Yeah. You just have to either wear it on your chest or something where it always has to be present. I mean, because there's just what? Just no way, just by looking at me, you can't assume anything. Or especially right. if we have a name that's difficult to pronounce or, you know, or they're looking on the card. And they just, and they're
oh,
not
yeah. well, they
picturing, you know.
Yeah, well, I've gotten,
yeah.
well, I've gotten attorneys say, oh, can I shorten your name? And I'm like, absolutely not.
Not, nope.
No. Well, then, well, you know, again.
I've had people just
wanna,
mispronounce.
It, well,
easier for them. Yeah.
That's one thing. Right. But, mm-hmm. but to then want to take it and then you want to make it to where it works for you, then no. You know, you're not, we're going to keep it in a professional way. So if you can't say my
yes.
name, then say Miss Harrison. But no, you're not going to take my name and give me a nickname because it's going to make you feel comfortable.
Exactly. I think they had to do that in my school, too. They always want to shorten my name when I was younger. Like, why? my real name is Japanese, so it's Kimiko. And for some reason, anytime they have looked at my name, they have called me Kimco. Kimoko, or Kaliko, or Tamika. That's what troubled me.
Oh, wow.
Obviously,
oh, wow.
my name starts with a K, but you will still look at it and say Tamika. And I said, there is no T, and there's definitely no A. Where did you get that from? And I live in Georgia.
Right.
So
oh,
I was like,
wow.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. But yeah,
yeah, but that's
that is.
Was my purpose of yeah, but that was my whole purpose of being able to have that discussion to let people know that these things are still going on. Don't assume just because of the fact that I'm here that I'm still not dealing with racism. I'm still dealing with racism.
No,
I'm still dealing with sexism. I'm dealing with colorism. I mean, all of those things are
yeah,
still going
any,
on.
Yeah, especially any woman
not
of color.
Anywhere.
Any woman
right.
of color. If you are brown. My doctor is from India, and when she first moved here, they gave her a hard time. They didn't believe she was a doctor. A lot of people were like, I don't want to, I need a different doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she spent
oh, no,
all this time
I can
getting her
that.
Degree, coming here, doing her residency, and she sets up her practice, and nobody wants to come because she's Indian. She's brown
oh,
skin.
Wow. Well,
and that's
that
just anywhere.
Yeah, that's the racism. That's definitely racism, and certain prejudices about what they believe a doctor
mm-hmm.
should or should not be.
Or look like.
Well,
period.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it's supposed to be an older white man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can't
but,
be.
But still,
be
they don't bat
woman.
An eye. So they don't bat an eye if it's a white woman that's a doctor. They don't really bat an eye at that.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
they will, you know, balk at, oh, like, what medical school did you get into? If you tell them a good one, it's like, oh, well, if that's nice for you, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's nice for you.
Oh, yeah.
As if you couldn't get into that
well,
school or if you couldn't get into that law school on your own. You had to have help or you were a diversity, you know, they let you in because you were black.
Right. True. I mean, nobody's ever told me that, but I do like to make people blink a little bit because I'm also a tax attorney. So
mm-hmm.
that also makes people blink because that's a specialty and you have
yeah.
to be very smart to get a,
yes.
to get to become a tax attorney because I have a
that's
I have an LLM in tax. Yeah. So I always like to make people feel, you know, yeah, you're not talking to just anybody. I do have an LLM in tax and that shocks people as well, you know, when they learn about that because then they go, oh, and I'm like, okay,
yes.
what's the oh?
it's definitely needed because all those tax laws are ridiculous. But you know,
right, right. Well,
yeah.
I mean, again, it's the perception. It's that idea of oh, you can't be an attorney, and then oh, wait, you're a tax attorney too.
Mm-hmm.
So
with the specialty too, yeah. So
exactly
with,
who I am.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So with your writing, when you got started doing it, how was your publishing journey? Was it difficult to find someone to publish it, or did you self-publish?
So what I did was I was planning to self-publish it, but what happened, I wound up running across a company that they published basically only black female writers. So their whole mission is to only publish black female writers in certain genres for, you know, for the most part. And so I ran across this company on Instagram and reached out to that company. And because I liked their mission and I liked exactly what they were, you know, what they represent, I decided to go through that company. So I went through a company called Sovereign Noir Pages. And so they actually published my book. But what we did, is we did it as a partnership. So it's a hybrid type deal. So that's where it's almost like they're investing in you and then you are investing in you. So it's like a partnership, but it doesn't bring down to a 50-50 thing. It's a certain percentage that I retain, and there's a certain percentage that they, you know, that they will get from the sales. So so it's not a 50-50 split type thing, but it's a certain breakdown. So that's kind of what the hybrid deal is. And then I still retain 100% of my creativity, of course, in my book itself. So they don't own any of that. The book is mine.
Okay, so you kept your rights to the book. Okay.
Yes, I kept my rights.
That's good.
Yeah. No, I definitely wouldn't have done it if anybody was going to get the rights, because, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't recall seeing anybody there sitting there with me when I was writing it.
Exactly.
So I'm certainly not about to sit there and just write it off and give it to someone else just like that after my blood, sweat, and everything that and tears
it went
two
in,
years
yeah.
of doing that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
So will you continue to write any more books?
Oh yes,
along this with it within this vein.
I'm working on another book right now, actually called The Wrinkled Roads. So I'm writing a book about corrupt judges.
Okay, yes. So you definitely you got to explain that one.
Well, I'm sure, like in Atlanta and all across the world, there, you know, in the United States, there is judges that get themselves in trouble. And so I felt like that stories that maybe don't get really told that much. I think basically what happens is the scandal gets talked about, but not a whole lot of maybe about that judge. And so I feel like there needs to be a little bit more to kind of like understand or maybe try to understand how that judge went from here to there. And he or she, how they went from over here to over there. And some of these stories are interesting as I'm researching some of these people, like, you know, they grew up, like they went through all of these adversities and all of these things, you know, did all of this studying, go to these colleges, you know, work in all these different places, run for judge. And then next thing you know, you're in some like ridiculous scandal. So that's, you know, the story that I'm going to be talking about in that upcoming book.
Oh, wow. Well, that's definitely something that needs to be told. Understanding no matter what you do in life, something can always happen. Life happens in general. And if you're not prepared for it, you can get knocked down real easy.
Yeah,
just one bad decision. With one bad decision.
Or exactly. Just, like, and that's kind of what I'm going to talk about, how that one decision basically, like, for some people, their recovery are different. So for some people, like, they're totally done. For some people, they were able to pick up and go here. So, you know, I'm a highlight all of that information about what happened, you know, what happened ultimately happened to each person, you know, and how each person's, you know, this bad decision, what, you know, what it left them with after that bad decision.
So do you interview any of the people that are in your books? Or you just do research, or do you talk to them to get their story?
No, I don't talk to anyone. I do all research, and I'm such an intuitive person to where I can pretty much gather from researching the person kind of maybe a little bit about that person that I'm able to write. And I can say that because Gay Polk Payton, who's in chapter 3 of my book, she commented about how I nailed her story 100%. She said, well, wait a minute. She said, Taitreese, I didn't know you knew me that well. And, like, we know each other, but I don't know her that well. And I told her, I said, no, that was all my research. And just reading about her story, I was able to get into, capture what I felt like she was, and I was just able to put that into words.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
do. It's,
so I think I'm going to be able to do that. Yeah.
Okay. It's great to have that intuition that you can see and really tell someone's story without even, you know, they're like, hey, how'd you know that? You got cameras in my house somewhere?
That's pretty much what she was almost telling me. She was just like,
mm-hmm.
she was just kind of like, she was kind of taken back that I nailed her. She said I nailed her 100%.
Wow. And that's good. Sometimes people are a little too 100%. They're like, I didn't want anybody to know that. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I might get a little bit of that from this book, but I mean, I would never say anything negative. I basically just told
right.
the story from a narrative standpoint. And that's basically what I
right.
did.
And doing research, you assumed that it had already been written about them. So you kind of pieced it together, but you also found a way to, what's really going on with the person and not just what is reported about.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's really good. So you can do the next one with judges, and any other the plan is going to be also about women of color who are judges, or is it just different people?
Oh no, this one's going to be men and women, different races.
Ah, okay.
So this, cause remember, this is corruption. So that could be anybody. With the first book, I particularly looked for black females whose stories were similar to mine. So in that case, I was looking for black females. And this one, I'm just talking about, I have a little bit of a criteria for this one because it depends mm-hmm. on exactly what it is. But definitely there's a rhyme and reason as to what I'm writing about, because I am grouping some of these together based on certain criteria. So there's a little bit of a criteria, but it is a little bit flexible. And then I do have a third book that I'm also going to be working on. I'm going to be talking about New Orleans politics. So
mm-hmm.
that's the third book that I will be working on as well. And I might be doing a Mardi Gras book.
Oh, that sounds interesting. That'll be fun.
Well, that's going to be a little scandalous one too. So all of these are going to be nonfiction.
Okay. So all that, but that's good. That's good.
Well,
because a lot of people, you know,
some people may not agree with that, but I'm still going to write it anyway.
Well, you know what? Controversy sells. It really does. I mean, no matter how you spin it, it sells. And people are looking at drama. They buy things because the newspaper is a huge headline. They buy it because that's what they saw, and they want to know the story. So even though it may be controversy, especially if it is controversial, people want to know both sides. Most people do. I do.
Exactly.
I always want to know both sides because there are two sides to every story. So I want to know what happened.
True.
You know, not just from one
True.
Side, but get the whole picture by listening to both sides. So, yeah, I'm one of those nosy people like, okay, now what was this? But because there is, you know, there's a whole different side, you know. And we do all have different perspectives looking at the same thing. We see the same vehicle. We see the same person. And we'll have 25 different descriptions.
True.
Because it's our perspective. It's how we look at it.
Right. Well, and again, my thing, my whole theme is to do a narrative. It's not to be, mm-hmm. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. I'm not necessarily, you know, doing anything where I'm trying to, you know, discredit anybody or anything like that. It's just telling the story from a narrative standpoint, right? From a narrative standpoint, with, you know, based off of the information that I gather, and based off of my feeling that I'm getting from what, you know, what I can gather from that person. I'm not necessarily like writing stuff that is like totally false, like, oh, this person, you know, say grew up, you know,
right.
Or when they grew up rich, you know, I'm not doing anything like
mm-hmm.
that, but I'm definitely getting I can get a feel from a person, you know, by
mm-hmm.
by researching them and getting an understanding of who they are. And you can also tell, I mean, like with the stories that I talked about with all of these women, it was interesting because all of them kind of grew up around that same time frame, which was
mm-hmm.
around the civil rights kind of movement. Well, each person was in the civil rights movement depending on when they grew up at different
yes.
times. And so some
mm-hmm.
people, like one person I wrote about, was right actually in the thick of it and was actually like almost a part, basically a part of it, Whereas, mm-hmm. like, some of us were maybe more like we were at the end of it and we were a little bit younger, so we didn't know
right.
all of it. And so based on that error and based on the race of that person, you could pretty much probably tell the story of what that person was going through. Because if they were a
right.
little black girl during the civil rights movement, well, probably weren't doing certain things or were experiencing certain things, because we know this is what was going on in the nation at that time. So
right.
it's kind of easy when you think about it. You look at the era of what time that person was growing up, and you could pretty
mm-hmm.
much probably paint a picture of what that person was probably doing or going through at that time based off of what was going on in the world at that time.
Yeah, definitely, because I was a child of the 70s, so total different. I had the whole busing issue and things going on like that. So I did not experience, you know, what my mother experienced or my grandmother. So
right.
my perspective would be different because I didn't grow up during that time. But since then, there's things I've experienced, but a lot of it, it's funny, I didn't experience a whole lot of it until I moved here to Georgia.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Because I've lived in Louisiana, I've lived in Texas, I've lived in Colorado, New Mexico. And
really?
Yeah.
Me too.
So
I lived in Colorado.
It's totally different. Oh, really? What part?
And I lived in Texas, too. I lived in Aurora, and then I lived in Dallas.
Oh, my dad lives in Aurora still.
Okay.
And the rest of my family lives in San Antonio. So, yeah, and
okay.
I was in San Antonio for 20 years. So I was Air Force. We moved around. So, yeah.
Yeah, the ex was in the military. So we lived in Washington State. We lived in Germany. And then I lived
mm-hmm.
in Colorado. And then we moved to Texas. And then I finally came home to New Orleans 2008 or something like that. So I had been gone from New Orleans about 19 years before I finally came home.
Ah, okay. I know I finally had to go back. Last time I was there was 2014. It's been a while since I've been
okay.
back.
Okay.
But my sister
well,
goes back
here.
And forth all the time.
Yeah, we're here. We're not going. Look, we're here. We're not going anywhere. COVID
like, yeah,
and all. We're still here.
Oh, that's good. We're still in the – Georgia won't sit their behinds down. So the numbers keep going up.
Right.
Because people really don't want to adhere to the whole mask thing, which is silly.
I think that's everywhere. I think that's everywhere because
mm-hmm.
it's going on here too. We have it going on in New Orleans and, I mean, in other places. I think a lot of cities, you know, people are just getting restless. But, you know, if you stop moving, it'll stop moving. You know, if you
yes.
stop moving, it'll stop moving. So.
Mm-hmm. But some people are just not made to sit at home. They're just really, it is really not for everybody. I mean, there's some people, you know, a shy person, introverted person, yeah, but. Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm an outdoor. I mean, I'm a person that likes to go too, but I also like my life, so I adjust.
Yes, exactly. And it's not fun being sick. It's not. I had so many
right.
health problems.
No.
Not even funny. So yeah. So anytime I, you know, look, I'll stay home. It doesn't bother me. We got technology. Groceries come to the door. Okay, I don't have to go get.
Right. Exactly.
I don't need gas, but I ain't going nowhere. I can talk
right.
to my doctor
that's
on the computer.
Much, right.
So.
Via Zoom. Everything's via Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Oh, yeah. Talk face to face. You don't have to sit in line and wait either. When it's your time,
right. and
they come right on in there. So, oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I have a Zoom hearing tomorrow, of course. So, yeah, I mean, I did a Zoom trial a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it's a little weird.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're doing it. Now, there are some hearings that are being done in person in court, but there are a lot of,
mm-hmm.
you know, hearings that are being done via Zoom. So, I mean, you know, you have some people that are like, hey, I don't feel comfortable going in the courthouse. And so the court is like, okay, you know, we'll accommodate, you know? So,
right.
I mean, it's an adjustment. Everybody's having to adjust.
Yeah. And so they get a handle on it. I think that's, we're just going to have to do that.
Right.
But, you know,
I mean, it's.
But people here are still like, hey, I got things to do.
I mean, mean, and I get it, and I know it's a frustrating thing.
I do understand.
Having to wear the mask.
But yeah, I have asthma, so yeah, that mask is going on. Period. I'm not gonna play with that.
Definitely. Right.
Because any upper respiratory issue I have, you know, it's gonna affect that. I'm already compromised, so I don't want to add to that. And nobody, you know, some people who contracted it have, you know, they died, and they were perfectly healthy and had no other, you know, situations going on. So that we don't know how it's going to affect every person. So
right.
Oh, well, I'm healthy, so even if I get it, I could get over it. Some people have not died. Some people have, you know, they've had it and they're fine. But that's not everybody. So you can't go by that. Well, they didn't die, so I guess, you know, won't bother me.
Right. Yeah, well, you know what it is. It's that, well, it hasn't affected me, so I must be good.
That's
kind of thing. But
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people's mindset until they know someone that it actually affected, and they don't really take it seriously. And then by the time it does affect them, it may be too late, and that's the thing. You know, what it is people feel like they're fighting an unseen thing, and so they don't see it, so they don't believe it exists.
Right. And I think a lot of people do. They are like that. It's unless, because it's, you know, they see it, if it's not seen, but then that's where faith comes in. You know? You can't see,
right.
But it's there. So,
right.
But if you don't believe it's there, you're going to just act like it's not there. And then when you say, well,
right.
You know, you can't say you didn't know, but all you can say is, oh, well, I didn't think it was going to affect me.
Right. No, I agree with all of that, but it's changed a lot of things. Cause even with like book signings, cause somebody just asked me the other day,
right.
Well, are you going to do a book signing? And I said, this is my problem with it. I would love to do a book signing, but what's going to happen is somebody's going to want to hug me. They're going to want to take a picture with me. And I don't
mm-hmm.
want to put a person in a position where I have to tell them no. And,
right.
You know, and even, and I don't want to be in a position where I'm feeling uncomfortable or that person's feeling uncomfortable. And because I feel like it just might not be safe, I just, you know, I'd rather, you know, do interviews like this or, you know, talk to people via Zoom or something like that until
you can
feel
do
like
virtual
things are a little
book,
bit comfortable.
Yeah.
Right.
You can do virtual book signings, even live reads. I mean, it's not like interact with people virtually.
Right. Well, he was talking about a face-to-face, and I just told him, mm-hmm. I just with everything going on, I just don't know if it's a safe thing, and I just don't want to put people in a situation or put myself in a situation where people are wanting to do the regular things of a book signing, and I don't feel comfortable doing that with everything going on. And so it's just made us maneuver, you know, handle business in a whole different way and you know, mm-hmm. including book signings and things like that, because like you said, you could do virtual, but as far as the face-to-face, I just don't, you know, I just don't know if that would be a good idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. And really right now, even all of the, you know, interactive author activities we had scheduled for the year were, you know, moved to next year because there was no way we were going to do it. As much as we all wanted to go,
sure.
You know, we couldn't take that chance. And it could, you know,
right.
For people to actually be right there in your face and, you know, because it's a place you can go with your family members and everything. So, it's, you know, why put yourself at risk? So,
you know,
it could be,
right.
We could
and
do
I
it
mean,
next
it's
year.
Right. Well, and it's a safety for everybody. So, I mean, you know, I'm mm-hmm. worried about, of course, I don't know, we don't know where that person's been. They don't know where I've been. And so you don't want to
mm-hmm.
put either person in any kind of situation. And so it's been a little different, but I mean, I've been enjoying it. I've been enjoying doing the things that I have been doing because I have been able to talk to people. I mean, I even did an interview all the way in the UK. So,
right.
I mean,
nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, so doing it this way, it allows you to talk to so many different people in so many different areas. Because, I mean, you know,
yes.
Of course,
you have a much larger reach. Yes, because you would, I mean,
right.
you wouldn't actually be in the UK, but you have a larger
right.
reach now because of this. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So, it has
so even people that you wouldn't even think.
Right.
Yeah.
So it has its pluses and minuses, you know, when it comes down to it. But, yeah, you definitely, it's definitely just different because of the fact that, you know, the traditional way is, oh, do the book signings and you go from here to here to here to there. But, you know, we're just we're not at that anymore. We're, you know, we're doing things definitely different.
Yes, definitely so. Well, I'm going to take a short break. Our second guest is not here, but when we come back, we'll continue talking, okay? So we'll be right back in a few minutes. Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silverain. MahoganySilverain.net.
Oh, man.
Ah, there we are. You're still hanging in there with us. Thank you. We are back now.
Yeah, I'm
and
still here.
Sorry about that. Sometimes we have a little difficulty. But
oh,
we're
that's
here.
Okay.
Got all these buttons, and sometimes you think you've hit the right button, and you haven't. See, that's why editing comes in.
right, exactly.
So tell us... what advice would you give people if they ask you about the book or say they get in that situation? What advice would you give them?
One of the things that I say in my book, and I always say, is to stand in your truth, stand up for yourself. You know, don't let anybody, I always say that I don't do bullies. Don't let anybody, you know, bully you. The situation I was in was definitely a bully, you know, from the time the person, the stranger that, you know, wrongfully gave the story to the police. But from the time this person accosted me by basically, you know, getting in my face, to the time that it got to the DA's office, to the time I dealt with this, to the time I did, it was just a set of bullies. And so I would say, stand up for yourself and don't let anybody try to dictate your narrative. You can control your narrative.
Exactly.
And you control it by telling the truth. You know, that's how you'll come out on top, if you control your narrative. When you start letting other people control your narrative, then you basically have lost if you do that.
Exactly. So in your publishing journey, what advice would you give for someone who wants to write something similar or another nonfiction book?
With the nonfiction, just make sure you research, you know, everything. Don't invent stuff. just be very careful about, you know, what you're doing. Because when you're doing nonfiction, you know, you're basically, this is true. This is real stories, real people. So you want to be very careful when you're doing things in that nature. You know, like somebody told me, they like doing fiction because with fiction, you know, they can kill somebody off. You can make them do this. You know, you can do all kinds of things when you're dealing with fiction. But with nonfiction, yeah. and especially if you're talking about other people's stories, you gotta, you know, you're limited in how you can maneuver, because you can't all of a sudden say this person was, say, the president when the person was never the president, that kind of thing. So
exactly.
you just want to be careful when you're doing, you know, doing nonfiction. And then as far as the publishing, I think people have to figure out what's best for them. You know, mm-hmm. I think they have to figure out if self-publishing is the way to go. It's a lot, but I would make sure I research. You know, I'm an attorney, so I researched a lot as far as like the publishing,
mm-hmm.
self-publishing, traditional publishing, and, you know, going to one of these companies, they call them the vanity publishers, where you pay them,
yes,
a, you know, an exorbitant
yes.
amount of money. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful. You just got to be careful. Just like in any industry, there's always predatory type behavior, and they could be some
yes.
predators out there when you're talking about in the publishing world. So you just want to be very careful. Check people's credentials. Like, I have a developmental editor that I work with. He actually is in Atlanta. His name's Jamie, and he's in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, before I decided to go into a contract with him, I verified, you know, if you're dealing with a professional, that person should be on LinkedIn. That person should have a CV, you know, a resume, something. That person
right.
should be able to give you references and things like that. You know, you just got to – everybody can call themselves – like, it's interesting when you go online and you see all these people, well, I'm a coach. Well, anybody can call themselves a coach, because there's no education or anything in order for you to become a coach. But just because somebody's a coach, that doesn't mean that person can really do what it is that they need to do, just because they're self-appointing themselves a coach. So you want to know
right.
what has that person done for other people.
Or
just
what
like
trainings have they had, yes.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, him, like say him as a developmental editor, well, what have you done? He's written books. He works as a professor in creative writing. Okay, so you
mm-hmm.
have the credentials to be a developmental editor. Instead of, I mean, I can call myself a developmental editor. I mean, I can call myself
True.
Whatever, but that doesn't mean that I have the skill set to actually be a developmental editor. So you just want to make sure that whoever you're dealing with has that experience, and not them telling you that. You want to go and research that person after you've done that. Don't let because of course the person's going to say, "Well, yeah, I know how to do it." You never ask the devil for the answer. You go get the answer.
You can look for
I mean, it's
exactly.
You know, ask the devil for the truth. The devil never
no.
will tell you the truth.
No.
And I'm sorry.
Or
it might
be some truth
devil.
To it, but it's going to be twisted. So
right. And I'm not calling anybody the devil. Nothing like that. I was just using that as an analogy. I don't want anybody to
yes.
misconstrue what I'm you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. not at all. I know
well,
you always have
well,
to.
I just got
to
be clear.
CYA.
I'm
talking about
we
always
calling
have to.
People devils.
Although sometimes the name is warranted, but we won't go there.
right.
So you've got
yeah,
several,
so you're
several
to
more
get me
books.
In trouble.
Yeah. No, I'm not. No,
yeah,
I'm like
yeah,
I said, we play a lot. So I play a lot, but. I to keep it light, and I don't talk about people, and I don't play devil's advocate. I always try to look at things from other people's perspective and try to see how another person would look at it, because you never really know. Because, you know, you can't jump to
no,
conclusions about anything. So I don't assume. That's why I ask the question. And, you know, I ask
right,
sometimes what people
right.
don't want to, you know, ask or but. You know, when I come across nonfiction books, I've not published one. So I also ask for myself, because I would like to tell my story, but I want to do it in a way that is based on a true story, but it'll be fictional, because I don't want to incriminate or, you know, or protect people who are innocent in the story. So that was how I was looking at it, instead of just coming straight out
well,
as a nonfiction.
Well, then that's not going to be nonfiction then.
Yeah,
that's
yeah I mean that.
Well,
it's to if I change the names.
Bit.
I mean that's why I was asking. You know, if I change the names or you know,
you
tell the story,
it could still
but
be a true story. Yeah, and you could change
mm-hmm.
the names if you want to. So I mean, there would still be nonfiction based, and you could change the names. Now, in my book, I did not change names, so the names are
right because you were actually
names.
Talking about real people. And yeah, because
yeah,
I know people get
real
really
people
upset about
situations.
That, you know, because you have to get permission to have people in a book. especially if you're writing about them. And I even, you know, even family
that's
members
not true.
Will say, I didn't tell that's you, but that's what they'll say.
But that's
you know,
not,
they'll say, oh,
but that actually is
yeah.
not true. You do
no,
not have
not.
To have permission depending on what you're, again, like I said, if you're writing something where you're saying something that's false, then you're getting into a defamation situation, then yes,
right.
you are going to have a problem. But if you're telling a story that is, well, there's your truth, there's that person's truth, and then there's
mm-hmm.
the, you know, the real truth. So,
the real truth. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you might get into a situation where that family member may have a problem with it. Because, of course, they're always going to remember the story that's in the better light for themselves. They're never going
right.
to remember the story in the light that may say if you told them something and they didn't do anything, they're going to say, oh, no, you never told me. So
right, because they don't want to look like the bad guy.
Different. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody's always going to want the story to be told in a positive light. Nobody wants to be in the book in a negative light. I haven't written anything, and, you know, my books had nothing to do with my family members. My sister is mentioned in the book, but again, my sister wasn't mm-hmm. an active participant, meaning doing anything negative. So, of course, she
right.
didn't have any objections with anything that I wrote about. But including family members and dealing with stuff like that, yeah, you may deal with some fallout, you know, from something
mm-hmm.
like that. But if the person is a public person, like anybody that is considered a public person, you can,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I could write a book about, say, Kim Kardashian. So,
right.
Now I can't like make up stuff about Kim, but I can write
mm-hmm.
a story about her because she's a public person based off a certain thing. So you can do that. Like I can have an opinion about her,
right.
but I can't say, oh, she's a murderer. I can't say she's a killer because that's not true. But
right.
I can have an opinion about her that, oh, when she did this, in my opinion, is this or something like that. So you
right.
can write about people without their permission. Because, I mean, think about it. If I wanted to write about a famous person, I mean, you really think the person's going to be like, well, yeah, sure, go write that book? No. So you can write about public people.
Yeah.
When you're writing about a private person, say a cousin or a sister or brother, that's when it may
mm-hmm.
get a little bit more tricky, and that's when it may get a little bit more difficult. Because you are basically talking about something that happened within the family, which wouldn't
within
necessarily
the
be a public, right, that may not be necessary because they're not public people, and this is not a public story that you're talking about, so it's going to get a little bit different if you're doing that. And I,
mm-hmm.
those stories, I probably, me personally, because the stickiness of that, I probably would not, but it depends. You know, if I felt like the story needed to be told and I'm telling it from
mm-hmm.
my perspective, then, yeah, I will tell it. And I'll put your name in it.
See, that's why I was kind of worried about how I could put that, you know, because I do have a story. And I was going to write it
there's
as fiction based
members.
On my, yes, to
okay.
not include them, even though, because they weren't in a negative light, they're part of who I stayed with or helped me when I was going through this. So, but just the fact that I would mention them really had them kind of up in arms. So I said, well,
oh,
fine, I'll just, yeah. Even though it was not negative,
okay.
it was still, they just didn't want to be mentioned.
So, they don't want to be named in the book. I got you.
Right.
So in
mm-hmm.
your case, you may want to do where, yeah, it's a fictional book based on nonfiction, based on
okay.
real people. You know,
okay.
you may want to, so you may not be able to, or you can change their names. I think it would
true.
Still fall under nonfiction, but I'm not sure. Now, I'm not that big of an expert on the fiction, nonfiction, as far as the difference, but I think you could maybe still write the book and maybe just
mm-hmm.
change, you know, change the name and not use their real name. And it still could be considered nonfiction. You're just not, you know, some of the names have been,
including,
you know,
yeah.
when they do the movie credits, have been changed
yes,
to protect
and been
the
changed
innocent and all of that stuff.
Because there are some innocents, but, you know, it definitely. So, yeah, I was
no,
just worrying about the legal part.
Definitely right. Yeah.
So,
no, I think you definitely should write this book.
So
I think that's a very good story. And it would be interesting for you to be able to maybe get some of the other women, if you could,
yes,
like
because there were several
well.
Who were there with me who really should not have been there.
Oh, wow.
Just because the laws of the state are just different for women, and it is not a state for women at all.
And that's so New Mexico. That's
New Mexico. The joke right. being what the guard, one of the guards told me was, he said, you go to New Mexico on vacation, you leave on probation, and you come back on violation because it's that bad.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I've never been. I don't know anybody in New Mexico. I never wanted to go. I think we passed it when we were driving to go to Colorado. I think we may have went through there, but I've never, it's just never been on my radar. So I couldn't tell you anything about, like, I lived in Texas and I was an attorney in Texas. I'm not licensed in Texas, but I'm still familiar with some of the laws in Texas.
Right.
And then definitely, you know, some of the laws in Colorado, and then also when I lived in Washington State, but I never lived there. So, I'm definitely not familiar with any of their laws, but I'm going to have to go and look some of that stuff up, because that's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, it really was. It's not, there was a woman there who was abused, and she defended herself, but she was the one in jail, and they gave her children, who were battered by her husband, to him. And they put her in jail. He burned her.
Alleged.
And she, yes.
Make sure you say alleged.
Alleged.
All this stuff is alleged.
Yes. Alleged. And she was the one in jail with burn and wrapped up, and they had her in a cell. And he had custody of the children.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the sad thing is, stuff like that happened in New Orleans. We've had, I know of cases where, the person said in court that he would do XYZ again to his spouse or ex or girlfriend, I can't remember which, and said that in court on the record in front of the judge, and the judge still denied the protective order for the female. Even after that person said that they will do XYZ.
That they would do that.
Yeah, they would do it again, and they were going to keep doing it, was what the person said. And the judge still denied the protective order. So, it's just like, are you serious? I mean, what do you mean?
Yes,
like a video?
She just said. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
And
so, those things happen, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah.
They happen.
It does. It was really sad to see, though, just because a lot of them were in there. It was a total difference between the Texas jail and New Mexico. Total difference. I mean, just the way we were housed, how we were spoken to, things that, we had to deal with, totally different.
Oh,
just
wow.
Like night and day. Whereas, it didn't
and
matter.
City,
I had the wrong,
what
you know.
What city was this?
Albuquerque.
What city was it?
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah. Bernalillo County, I think. Yeah. Like I said, there's not very many. And like I said, I didn't see any black people until Sunday. I lived on base. And during the week, anywhere in New Mexico, anywhere in Albuquerque, there was like one place you can get your hair done. And it was across the street from the barber who did the black man's hair. But I could not go in the store and buy any makeup. I couldn't buy my hair products. I had to go on base for that because they didn't even sell it.
Okay.
Not at all.
Wow. Yeah, definitely was in an area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, and when I went to church, it's like, that's where are you guys at during the week? Because I don't see anybody. It's like, I didn't even know they had this many black people here. It's like, where are you guys during the week?
Oh, wow.
But it was really, I actually had a better deal in Texas. So it was. It was interesting.
And that's kind of scary because Texas can be kind of scary. So for
Texas was
better, that tells you how bad it was for you to say that Texas was better.
Because really, Texas did not want to.
Texas has their issues too.
Yeah, they do. Now, I'm not saying Texas is perfect either because they have their. It's what is that? You go straight. It doesn't matter. There's if you have a certain amount of a drug, you go straight to Texas Detention Corrections. It doesn't, Department of Corrections. You do not go to jail, to Bexar County Jail. You will actually go straight. That's it. It's a straight shot. There's just no, and it's with anybody with a certain amount of drugs, depending on how much it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you go straight. There is no stopping. You're in jail. Somebody can bail you out. Nope. And they held me on a $10,000 cash surety bond. So there was no 10% of $1,000. I had to come up with $10,000 to be bailed out. And I didn't have it. And I did not want my parents to pay it. And I said, I'll just stay. But I was not.
So there's no percentage like there is in New Orleans, where it's like it's 10%, 12% of the bond.
I mean,
you actually have to pay
normally,
the
normally it would be. But for some reason, this judge decided it was cash surety bond for custodial interference. When I didn't have anything that was custodial, I had already left the state, and it was issued after I left the state.
I gotcha.
So, I was like, well, where am I going to go?
Wow.
So I got extradited.
Right.
Yeah, but if they didn't pick me up within 6 days, Texas was going to let me go home. They came on the sixth day.
Oh, wow.
I was thinking, okay,
yeah.
I got one more day. They're not coming. I'm going home. No, they showed up.
Yeah. You got to
yeah.
definitely have a story there. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. But it's, I'm glad to see that this book is really how it tells everybody's stories and different things and professional women. I mean, I'm not an attorney or anything like that, but, or a doctor. I was law enforcement, but, so being on both sides, I now know, but because of what I was in for, my record was expunged after 18 months probation in New Mexico, because Texas still would not recognize the ruling. So in Texas, I didn't have to. So I had to, they actually let me go all the way back to Texas, and I mailed for 18 months my form all the way back to New Mexico. Each month checking in with the,
Why didn't Texas recognize it? What was
because
the reason?
The child was with his mother, and she had every right to take him.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. So Texas
not a real, no, they wouldn't acknowledge it. That's why they had to get federal in, because they wouldn't acknowledge it. They're just like, no.
I gotcha.
Police officers, they wouldn't even come to the house. They're like, he's with his mother. What are you talking about?
Oh, wow. Right. No, I will say Texas family laws are pretty reasonable.
Yeah,
because I'm familiar.
They really
I'm familiar
are.
With their family laws. Yeah, so they're pretty reasonable, and their child support is pretty simple. It's very, very straightforward. The divorce is pretty straightforward. There's not it's not very difficult at all. So because I'm familiar with their family law stuff, child support, custody, and all that stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, New Mexico wanted to have you split it up. I would get the house during the day, and then when he gets off, I would go to a hotel, and then he would have the child at night. That was their mediation for the divorce.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because I don't know if things have changed. Yeah, but I know they. One thing I like Texas, they make you.
But this is New Mexico. That wasn't Texas. Yeah, Texas didn't.
Oh,
didn't
that's
do that.
Right. That's right.
But yeah.
Right.
But this is what New Mexico thought. And, that's how they look at it. And that was your mediation to, you just split the house that way. And it's like, how so that the kid gets both parents. And I guess they thought that was better for the child to have both parents every day. I'm paying for a hotel room every night to go sleep in because, we're not together.
Yeah, that sounds pretty strenuous on the parent.
Mm-hmm. But they said that would work best for the child. It was not for the mother at all, because I didn't have a job at the time, so, yeah. But that's how they look at it.
Mm. Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. So that was something, but, you keep doing what you're doing. I'm definitely glad. And if you didn't hear the name of the book, I'm going to say it again. It's called Bitch Hunt. So find this book. Tell us where we can find it. Is it on Amazon? Is it in Barnes & Noble?
It's on all those places. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Apple Books. It's also a kit. It's an ebook. So Walmart, I think, does ebooks. So it's on Walmart as well. So you can find it in any of those areas. Right now, I don't think the hardcover is available. We were going through Ingram Spark. I think they're having some issues because of COVID. But mm-hmm. you definitely can get the ebook or you can get the paperback.
Okay. And do you have a website or anything where readers can?
My website is patriceharrison.com. And what it'll do, it'll lead you to those sites that I just told you about.
Okay. And just so they know, can you spell out your name for them for the
sure.
your website?
T-A-E-P-R-E-C-E, and then Harrison, H-A-R-R-I-S-O-N. So it's all one word, patriceharrison.com.
All right. So you heard it here, so you can get the book. And are you on social media at all? If there's a place they can look you
Instagram.
Up or Facebook?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and again, I use the same name. I don't use different names. So if you look up Patrice Harrison, you'll be able to find me on any of those platforms.
Awesome. So thank you for coming and talking with us and sharing your knowledge, because I like talking to you, finding out things and asking questions. I'm definitely going to finish this book because this is definitely needed. And
yes.
women who are professionals or even non-professionals, it doesn't matter. We need to know these stories and find ways to prevent and always stand up for yourself. As you, like you were saying,
yes.
is there, you have anything yes. that you would like to add?
No, I mean, go buy the book. And share and like and send me a review on Amazon. And I mean, whatever your review is, that's fine. I'm here to learn. If people, it may not resonate with everybody, but if you have something positive, I definitely would love for you to leave a review about it.
Definitely. So yes, if you the best thing you can give an author is a review, especially on Amazon, because they need at least 20 for Amazon to really pick it up and start really promoting the book themselves. So, yes, please, if you get the book, read it, leave a review. Even if, if you don't have that much to say, but if you really liked it, at least a sentence, small paragraph. Hey, I liked it because, or whatever, or these stories impacted me in some way, especially for a nonfiction book, because that's what you're looking for. Especially with nonfiction, because it is a true story. And these women are real. Their stories are real. And it's very important in things that are still happening right now, even today. My issue that was, my son is now 26. That was years ago. But this is, like you said, so the laws may have changed. But things are still happening, especially more and more. So we need to stand up. And so thank you.
We do.
Patrice, for coming
Thank
on
you.
And sharing your book with us. And, let me know when the second one comes out and I have you back again. We can talk about that one because that's going to be an interesting one. I like that. And the format that you have set up
definitely.
For it. Yes. So definitely let me know. We'll keep in touch. Let me know. I'll keep promoting the book on my page, Mahogany Says page, and I'll have a group for that too. So I'll keep continuously promoting you there as well so that people will see it and people who maybe didn't, catch it tonight can catch it again on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, and also Apple Podcast, Radio
cool.
Public, things like that. So it will be broadcast in different places. So they can catch it again. So if you miss
right,
tonight, you can
I like
still
it.
Catch us. Yes. So we are all over, and we have listeners I looked up my demographics, Australia, as well as Jamaica, and a new country, the Sierra Leone. So. Well, in Africa, Africa. So we've got listeners there. So I don't know how things work there, but their stories will still be, your story will still impact someone even there. So you never know.
Oh, my book is international. So you could get it in the UK, Canada, Japan.
So people listening,
Germany.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You could get it in those other places. So it's not just in the U.S.
So, yes. Definitely pick up the book. It's called Bitch Hunt for a reason, and read these powerful stories. So thanks again for coming on, and I wish you all a good evening, and I wish you the very best, and I will continue to definitely push this book because it is very needed in this time. And I look forward to reading the next one too, as well. So thank you all.
I look forward to reading your book.
Oh, thank you. I have fiction, so if you like romance stories, you know, you might read it. Hey, if you want to escape for something, you know, hey, you got a time in between, you know, pick one up. I got some novellas, they're short.
Oh, okay. I'll pick one up and see a dive into some romance. Oh, good.
There you go. Yeah, it's not the heaving bosoms. It's not one of those.
Okay,
it's
good.
Like, you know, more down to earth. It's some paranormal stories in there. So, you know, it's a little bit for everybody. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the one I have based in New Orleans is the Grand Dame of Bourbon Street. That's the one based in New Orleans. Yes.
All right. Yep. I'll have to check that out.
All right. So everyone have a good night. I wish you peace, blessings, and love.
Good night.
Mahogany Says with Mahogany Silverain at mahoganysilverain.net. Thank you and good night.